Empower your workforce with financial wellness solutions tailored to their needs. Introducing Credkin, a comprehensive platform designed to enhance the financial health of your employees. In today's fast-paced world, providing support for financial well-being is not just a benefit, it's a necessity. With Credkin, your company can make a meaningful investment in the financial futures of your employees. Boost employee productivity and engagement. Financial stress can significantly impact employee productivity and engagement levels. By offering Credkin's financial wellness solution, you demonstrate your commitment to supporting your employees beyond the workplace. Empowered with tools to manage their finances effectively, your workforce can focus more on their work, leading to increased productivity and engagement. Differentiate your company as an employer of choice. In today's competitive job market, attracting and retaining top talent is essential. Stand out from the crowd by offering Credkin as part of your employee benefits package. Potential hires will be drawn to a company that prioritizes their financial well-being, while current employees will feel valued and appreciated, fostering loyalty and long-term commitment.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Career Talks podcast. As always, I'm your host, Orlando Hange, and each and every week, I bring you amazing talent to give you actionable advice for your career and life. But first, let me thank my partnership with Credkin, as you've seen the intro video there. So this month is all month long about financial literacy. So I want to make sure I highlight that partnership and the value they bring to the community and employers. So tonight's guest, as people are flooding in, this is a big topic, right? How do you get hired at a global company? We're going to dive into the strategies, the techniques, the how to, the know what not to do. But we can't get it done without my man, Johan. So let me bring him to the platform, Mr. Johan Mehta. What's going on, sir?
Thank you, Orlando. Hi, everyone. So nice to see all of you. I see lots and lots of familiar faces on the podcast today. So looking forward to this.
Absolutely. So I'm bringing us close, changing the view style is folks starting to see, bringing us real close up to the screen. It just makes for a better conversation. It looks better. So appreciate everyone tuning in. Great, great turnout. So as you're watching, say hello, let us know what country, what city, what state you're from, and get your questions ready. So it may be too many questions to ask, answer right here on the platform right now, but definitely drop them in and it'll be up to Johan to answer those questions post-production. So either way, let's first get started. Johan, give us a brief background of what you do, your expertise, and then we'll jump in.
Yeah, first of all, Orlando, thank you again so much for having me on this podcast. You know, some of you I know and have been following me, so thank you so much for continuing to follow me and join today. I see a lot of familiar faces, lots of followers of Orlando, I'm sure, joining in as well. So hello and welcome. A little bit about myself. So I am, you know, as the talk says, you know, someone who's worked for top global companies in the world. Currently, right now, I'm working as a change management consultant for Deloitte in Canada over here. I'm also a career coach, so I help a lot of professionals, you know, mid-career professionals typically get their next big job over here in Canada. I'm also a dad of three, so I have two daughters, 9 and 6, and a 10-month-old son at home. So keeping busy with, you know, with work, with coaching, with fatherhood, and I do a lot of volunteer and community service as well, predominantly, again, in the career coaching space. So just a little bit. I don't want to bore people with too much about me because I keep giving this introduction. I'm sure people have heard this multiple times.
No worries, man. No worries. So my audience has not heard it, so I appreciate you going ahead and explaining that, and definitely your background with global companies adds more credence to, you know, this conversation. So you're in the space, you're walking the talk. Awesome. So what are you getting from, let me ask this, when it comes to the clients you help, how many of them are actually targeting, you know, global companies?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I start working with people, more often than not, people want to work for the top companies, right? Everybody wants to work for the Amazons and the Googles and the Apples of the world. But the first exercise that we work on together is gaining clarity on why is it that you want to work for a big global company. And more often than not, I find that people don't have a clear direction or a clear why or a clear purpose in terms of why they want to work for a big company. Besides, just the reputation of the company itself. Like they have not spoken to anybody working over there. They don't know what the day-to-day looks like. They don't know what they'd be doing. They don't know too much about the compensation or they have an inflated view of the compensation. So there's many things that people are blindsided by that I help them because of my first-hand exposure working for these companies and knowing so many colleagues now working for these companies. I give them that first-hand exposure in terms of, this is really what it is like even working over there. So is this something you still want to pursue? So that's typically step one.
Love that. Love that. It might be just like you said, for the folks who just want the kind of status on the resume, but don't really know how it works in the workings, right? So all the process, so each company is different. It may not be all bells and whistles what you think it is until you get in there, but it's definitely a benefit. It is. Let's be honest. It's good to have a global brand, on your resume. There's no doubt about that. So as folks are coming to you saying, I want to work for a global brand and don't have the clarity of that, what are some of the reasons they're giving you? Is it just to have the name, or have they done the research, and can they give you clarity to say, well, I love the projects they're working on in AI and project management, change management, et cetera. And what do those conversations sound like to the folks who know why they want to work for global companies?
Yeah, so like I said, I mean, more often than not, people don't have a strong enough understanding of why they want to work or even what it takes to work for a big global company. For the people who do know or who have done their homework, who have done their research, who've had conversations, I think for them, the missing piece typically ends up being not having enough focus in terms of the role. So they'll come to me saying, Johan, I want to work in consulting at Deloitte. But then what's missing is, what kind of consulting? What level are you targeting? Right? Even within AI, like AI is very broad, for example, at Deloitte, which is where I'm working right now, right? There are many sub functions within AI. Same thing within management consulting, right? We have operations, we have supply chain, we have finance. So there's many different areas even within the consulting arm. So a lot of people don't have that clarity in terms of, what within consulting they want to do or what within machine learning or AI they want to focus on. But then, once people have had enough research done or more often than not, when they've had enough conversations with actual people working at Deloitte in those areas, this is when they start really getting clarity, as opposed to just, reading a bunch of job descriptions or reading some information on the Deloitte website. That typically is very high level information and it's not sufficient. And it's very important. It's very important to do that research, not just to gain clarity, but this then helps you with, networking conversations. This then helps you with interview preparation as well. So I would say, if I was to give you guys today 5 steps on how do you get yourself into a big global company, step number one is going to be clarity. So step number one is being extremely clear on, first of all, who you are. Okay, so when I say who you are, your personality. Not everybody's personality is well suited for working in consulting, for example. You do need a certain type of persona to be able to succeed in consulting, right? And if you don't have that persona, it does not mean that you can't get into a consulting firm. You definitely can, but it will be a lot more challenging for you to show up and to do good work and to do it in a way that comes naturally to you. So, for example, if you are naturally very introverted, You're not someone who likes communicating. You're not someone who likes building relationships. Getting into consulting where you're constantly talking, where you're constantly, having to build relationships with clients can be challenging. And I faced that when I started consulting because I'm very introverted. I initially did not have an inclination towards, communication and building relationships. So I struggled. I struggled in my first couple of years in consulting. But then, I learned and I kind of got in and I learned the hard way. But more often than not, people struggle and they don't last too long if the personality is not properly suited. So number one is, who you are in terms of your persona. The second thing you want to be aware of is what are your strengths and your skills, right? And again, are they the right strengths and skills required for that specific role within that company that you're targeting? The third thing you want to look at is what are your values? So what is important to you? And this again comes back to the question about like, why do you want to work for a big global consulting company or big global company, right? So think about your why, and it goes beyond just reputation, right? Maybe it is about the type of role. Maybe it is the learning. Maybe it's the growth. Maybe it is the opportunity that it will create for you 5 years down the road. Right? Maybe it is the compensation, it's the money, maybe it's the travel, right? So whatever it is, it should align with your values. And values basically are your guiding principles, what's most important to you in your life and in your career right now. So step number one is being clear. And then once you're clear on who you are, then be clear on what you want in terms of, you possibly don't want to target every single big company out there. So you want to be specific. Right? In terms of industry, like, do you want to go tech? Do you want to go non-tech? Within non-tech, what do you want to focus on? Right? Retail, healthcare, telecom, oil and gas, right? So there's many different options. If you want to go the consulting route, I mean, then you get exposure to multiple industries because typically you're put on different clients across different industries. So that clarity piece is very important. And I would say start that as step number one.
So let's leave the folks on a little bit of a cliffhanger for 4 and 5, right? We got clarity, strength, skills, and values. But you said something that I think we need to unpack. So folks, if you're thinking when Johan said, if you don't have the right persona, right? So they're thinking, what do you mean? I'm a nice person. What is, So let's break that down. What types of persona work best in different industries to your knowledge based on your experience?
So when I say
start with consulting, yeah.
So when I say persona, I mean essentially what comes naturally to you in terms of behavior, and also in terms of your talents and your gifts and your skills that either have naturally been with you or you've honed them over the years. So for example, if you know that inherently you're not very strong with critical thinking. Or problem solving, or thinking outside the box, like being innovative, being creative, then certain roles within consulting would not be well suited for you because in consulting typically you're given problems to solve, right? That's what clients pay you money for. So if you don't have that natural inclination towards solving complex problems, it just becomes hard. It becomes very hard to do meaningful work and obviously to sustain in consulting. So that's what I mean is reflecting on your talents, your skills, your strengths, and then seeing if it's okay for certain roles. Now, not all big companies require you to be excellent with problem solving. And this is where it really depends on the role, right? So for example, you could be, at Deloitte in consulting, which does require you to be, critical thinking, problem solving, innovative, but then you could also be in accounting within Deloitte. And, the extent of problem solving is not as intense. So you could get away with not being, an excellent problem solver, for example. So this is where you might need other skills like numerical skills. And you may get away with, communication skills, relationship building skills, which is typically not the top skills required for an accountant within Deloitte. So that's what I mean is looking at what those skill strengths are and then aligning them with the role within the company.
But so every, I'm gonna skip to number
three. an persona will, you know, I mean, these companies hire introverts, extroverts, strong problem solvers, non-strong problem solvers. But it's just you have to be aware of what's required and see if that's a good fit for you.
Love that. So okay. When it comes to the values, right, I think, and you can let me know your thoughts on that. A lot of job seekers, and again, this is not a blanket statement, but at the same time, we see job seekers that will go for the value of either status, title, or income versus what I think you're saying is more core value. Does that company's mission or so align? So explain a little bit more about your thought process and when you say, you know, value in your why.
Yeah. Great question, Orlando. And I think it's a combination of both. So it's a combination of, you know, your inherent core values. So what is most important for you? So I'll give you my example. When I started doing consulting, this was about 15 years ago. What I cared about is doing really complex work, doing hard work, doing work that is going to really boost my career trajectory, working for a big name reputable company and earning a lot of money. So those were my core values. Those were what were important to me 15 years back. Now, 15 years later, they're completely different. So I don't, you know, money is not my top, even in my top five list of priorities. I don't really need a role that is extremely challenging right now. I don't need a role that is continuously making me learn and grow, right? Because I've achieved that and I've attained that over the last few years. So it depends on what is important to you right now. So I've taken on a role that, you know, pays me less, that lets me work from home, that gives me the work-life balance with my kids. And this is why it works out well, because it aligns with my values. The other values is the values of the company, right? So what does the company stand for? What is the mission of the company? What is the company trying to achieve? And see if you get energized just by reading that mission statement. And is this a mission you want to stand behind and serve? And if you can show energy, enthusiasm, in aligning with that mission statement, you know, for yourself, as well as when you talk to people working in the company, that really makes you stand out. And people will ask you specifically in interviews, like, why Deloitte? Why not Ernst & Young? Why not KPMG? Why not Boston Consulting? So you really need to know what the mission and vision is and why specifically you want to work for Deloitte and not the competitors.
So you said something that I've never heard before that is pretty interesting. You said at this point, you don't want a position or an opportunity, a career that constantly is challenging you. I don't think I've ever heard no one say that before, but I think a lot of us think that way. It was like, hey, I want to get into this role, master the role, and kind of just consistently do well and improve. Not something that you always have to learn every 2 weeks, 1 week. It's learning something new. So I think that can cause a bit of a burnout, right? It's how do you stand up the projects and everything you're working with and improve them, but not so much having to learn a ton of new skill sets, you know, throughout the year. I get it. That's a great point. And I want to make sure I pronounce her name right. We have a question, Dwani, and maybe you can, if you know her, Johan, you can correct me if I. Awesome. She's asking, how can we display these skills? So appreciate the question.
So great question, Dwani. So how can you display these skills? So many different ways, Dwani, of displaying these skills. One is, you know, the obvious one, which is put them on your resume, right? So don't just put the skill, but show us how you've used those skills. So for example, you know, if you know the role requires someone to be innovative or creative or thinking outside the box, show me examples from your previous work where you've actually applied that skill. And if you want to take it one step further, show me also the results or the accomplishments that you've had using that skill. So that's one example. Your LinkedIn profile is another great place to show me that skill. So right in your headline, which is, you know, below your name on your LinkedIn, you can put, you know, creative problem solver or innovative thinker, right? As an example of those skills. And then when you are having conversations with people in these companies, again, purposefully and intentionally bring up that, you know what, one of the things that I pride myself in, or one of my core strengths, is I'm very innovative. I'm always thinking, you know, two steps ahead. And in my recent role, this is what I did, and this is the result I achieved. And then, of course, you have to show it again during the interview, because you will inevitably get asked that question. So I hope that helps.
Awesome. Let's jump into number four. What would be the fourth item there?
Yeah. So actually, the first item was clarity, right? So being very clear in terms of who you are, where you want to go, and what companies, industries you want to work for. So that's number one. Number two is actually mindset. So number two is mindset. And, you know, getting into a big global company is going to play with your mind. And the reason why it's going to play with your mind is because you're going to get a lot of rejections, right? So, I mean, rejection is inevitable in the job search, but it just amplifies when it comes to working for big global companies. And the reason for that is very straightforward, because everybody is applying there and everybody wants to work over there. Right. So, for example, at Deloitte, you know, I hire for some analyst roles once in a while, and I kid you not, we get over 500 applications for one single role. Right. So your chances obviously aren't as high as maybe working for a lesser known company. So this is where a lot of people, what happens is they start applying, they start networking, and it's rejection after rejection after rejection. And the people who persist, the people who are able to overcome that self-doubt, those self-limiting beliefs, you know, they are the ones who really at the end up getting. So I've had so many people who, you know, for years have tried to get into Deloitte, and in their third year or in their fourth year is when they succeeded, right? So it's a little different from your typical job search, which might last, you know, 3 months or 6 months. Getting into these big name companies sometimes takes a couple of years. So mindset is very important. The third step that I want to focus on is networking. And I mean, everybody talks about networking and the importance of networking. But really, to get into a big global company, you have to network, and network like you're on steroids. So it's not just one-off coffee conversations, one-off coffee chats. No, this is, you know, every single week talking to at least, you know, 5 to 7 people in your target companies, in your target functions, in your target roles. Getting to know them, getting to know about what it's like to work over there, getting to know what are the skills and the strengths required to get your foot in the door. So you want to be very strategic in terms of who you connect with, you know, the coffee conversations you have with them, the questions you're asking them, and most importantly, the relationships that you're building with them, which you can then hopefully, you know, convert that relationship into a referral. One misconception people have with getting into a big global company is the concept around, you know, if I get a referral, I will get in. And trust me, it doesn't work that way in big companies. So I'll give you Deloitte as an example, right? Every 10th or 15th application is a referral. So think about this. If we get 500 applications, and if every 10th or 15th application is a referral, that's a lot of referrals. And not every referral obviously is going to get a chance to interview, right? Referrals don't hold a lot of value when it comes to these big companies that receive hundreds of applications. So then what is important? What is important is to take it one step further and to get what I call a recommendation. So a recommendation is a referral, which is, you know, an online referral in the system. And then the person working over there going out of their way to endorse you, to put your resume right in front of the hiring manager, or to put your resume right in front of the recruiter. So if you get these recommendations, and I've gotten these myself to be able to get into these companies, this is where the magic happens. And this is where you at least get a chance to interview. So networking and recommendations would be step number three.
So I like the way you heighten that. It's funny because, you're spot on, because Tiffany Human and I, which Tiffany, who you know, we did an episode just last week about networking through referrals, right? And we pretty much said the same thing. Just because you get the referral doesn't mean you get in a position. It gets you to the next stage potentially. But I like when you said the recommendation, because, and we talked about the, what does it mean? What's the, you know, what's the value in that network or that referral to get you there? You know, are you prepared? Are you giving that person who's going to put their neck out for you the right ammunition to back you up, to showcase your skills internally? And again, are you prepared if and when that call comes and they're saying, hey, we got your resume from Johan, wanted to, you know, schedule an opportunity to talk to you about this, this analyst role. And if you don't showcase your skill level, you're right, that in some can kind of way hurt a little bit. They'll be like, hey, Johan, the person you referred, you know, wasn't the best or did this or wasn't prepared, et cetera. So be mindful of that when you ask for those folks to, you know, go the extra mile for you and be a recommendation. I would say put a lot of onus on the person asking to say you have to be prepared for that opportunity when the opportunity comes, for sure, so you don't make that person look bad.
Absolutely.
One of the things
great point.
Yep. I love that you broke it out too. And you said mindset. Let's jump back to that, because like you said, I've worked for global companies, currently working for a global company now. And you said it can, from the rejection side, it can help, it can mess with your mind. What about once you're in, right? First time in, what does that look like? If you've seen folks that you've hired, they're like, yes, I made it. Now they're like, holy crap. Right? The work, what I, the scale of work or whatever it got to do, like this is almost like deer's in the headlight. What is that? What have you seen for folks who first time jumping into a global organization?
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that you asked me this question, Orlando, because, you know, and you actually reminded me of myself 15 years ago, right? Before working for my first global firm, which was Accenture, and Accenture today has over 700,000 people. So it's a big, big company. So I transitioned into Accenture after working for a company that had five employees. So five employees to 700,000 employees. That was a big, big jump. And holy shit was exactly the phrase on my mind when that happened 15 years ago. So I would say, you know, these days, because of the internet and because of, you know, the access we have so much access to really understanding, you know, what you're getting yourself into. So when you are doing your networking, you know, really, really get to the essence of what you'd be doing over there, right? So ask as many direct questions and practical questions on what the role looks like, what does the day-to-day look like, what softwares will you be using, you know, what tools, technology, all of this, right? So that way there are no surprises. When you start working for a big company, especially if you're coming from like a startup or a smaller company, or this is like your first job, it is going to be overwhelming. There's going to be so much information thrown at you. You know, your first entire week, there's going to be like 20, 30 different e-learning modules that you have to complete on ethics and safety and all kinds of things, right? So I would say, you know, first and foremost, be prepared before you get in to know exactly what you're getting yourself into. The second thing I would say is do not fabricate or lie on the interview just because you want to get in. Right? Because that will lead to negative implications after you've been hired, right? So if they ask you, like, have you used certain software systems, like, just be honest. And you know, if you haven't, just tell them that, you know, I haven't, but I'm a very quick learner. And I've been in situations where I haven't used systems in the past, but I've been able to upskill myself pretty quick. And I'm confident I can do this even for this role, right? Something like that. So there's no surprises for them or for you. I would say the third thing to do is to really listen. So one of the things people like to do is, you know, they want to come and they want to create an impression. And it's nothing wrong in creating a good impression. We all want to do that. But take the time to listen to the people, especially the people who've been working over there for a while, and they will tell you more about, you know, the culture, the people, the processes. This is what you should do. Don't waste your time doing this. You know, watch out for these kind of teams and people. So a lot of that inside information, go all in to listen to that and digest that. And then I would say one more thing you could do is look for one or two mentors who again have been in the company, ideally in the role, and have been successful in the role that they have played. And these people again can be your sounding board, right? Can serve as your sounding board to really make you settle in, to calm down those nerves, and then guide you in every step of the process, and make sure you set up regular touch points with them. So you can tell them, you know what, I feel very overwhelmed and anxious this week. This is what's kind of going on, or, you know, now I'm starting to feel more relaxed. And so that way there's always someone you can talk to. So I would say those three or four things would be really good.
Great, great points. And I want to unpack the last point you said about finding a mentor. I think it's a little different, right? When it's a smaller company, obviously, versus a bigger company, because you would assume that more people are asking the higher ups, the middle managers, directors, et cetera, to be a mentor, him or her. So what are some effective ways for them to, you know, target, look for, and pursue or approach a potential mentor when it comes to these global brands? What is that mindset and kind of, you know, tactical process for them to execute that?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, before you begin approaching people to become your mentor, think about what is it that you really want in a mentor, right? What are some of the things that you feel are potential gaps in terms of, you know, your skills, your strengths, or maybe your knowledge about the industry? So let's say you start working for Amazon, but you've never worked for a retailer before, or you've never worked in tech before, right? So that's is a gap for you. And this is where, you know, you want to find a mentor who's been in the industry for a while, as opposed to someone who's kind of fresh to it, just like yourself. So think about what is it that you really need mentorship on, and what are your gaps in terms of your experience, your skills, your knowledge. And then think about also what personality of mentors, what personality would you like in your mentor, right? Would you like someone who is very, you know, similar to you? Would you like someone who's very direct? Would you like someone who is, you know, a little more, I guess, empathetic and listens more? So there's different personas. And I would not just randomly start approaching people. I would say, you know, have a few conversations with a few different people. And then based on your initial one or two conversations, you can get a good idea for, you know, what they are, what they have to offer, what are their motivations in terms of mentoring you, what does their personality look like? And then, you know, make them that ask that, you know what, I'm looking for a mentor. This is my first time working for a company as big as this one. You know, I want to be respectful of your time. So the mentorship would look like, you know, one touch point a month for 30 minutes. And these are the three things I want us to focus on, right? So it's very clear to them in terms of what you'd be looking for, so they can come, you know, prepared, and they can tell you, first of all, if this is a yes or no as well.
I like those steps, because even if the organization has a mentorship program, like you said, it may not be to your first point, right? Or second point is the personality match, right? You could be assigned someone just by program and system and processes. Say, okay, because you're going into accounting, you get to go with, you know, Joe Blow or, you know, Sarah Smith. And then after you come to find out, the personalities don't match. And so you are having to now then navigate, okay, who else can I find? And I think the strategic way you're saying it is, one, how do I want this person to mentor me? What personality style works best? Is it direct? Is it more of empathetic, like you mentioned? And so I think that most folks assume, and again, I hate making blanket statements, but I think for the most part, we look at, because they're at this certain level, and we may see that they're getting so much respect and they're doing these great things, that that's the person we need to learn from. And then that might be the person who you know, an individual contributor and rock star, but horrible at training and development and mentorship. And so this, I think the way you're explaining it is really detailed for them to take a step back and really understand, you know, a slow process that's going to make a big fit for success. Yeah. What are some additional ways, and comments are coming in, what are some additional ways or things that we're not aware of in working for a global company that we should be thinking about once we one target and then get in the doors?
Yeah, I think, you know, a big piece that a lot of people don't focus on, I mean, they're aware of it, but they don't focus as much time and attention on, is their personal brand. And a lot of people, they rely, you know, either on job applications or networking and conversations and referrals, which is all good. But if you're talking about getting into, you know, a Boston Consulting Group, or a Deloitte or an Amazon or an Apple, these applications and these networking conversations may not be enough, right? And this is where you really have to think about, you know, what online presence do I have? And do people, it's not just about whether I know a bunch of people, but then who knows me and who remembers me and who likes me? And who's going to have me top of mind when there are opportunities, right? Because otherwise it's a very reactive approach where you're, you know, setting up job alerts, you're applying, you're networking, you're trying to get interviews. But if you create that online presence for yourself, that online brand for yourself, you know, whether that's on LinkedIn or other platforms, this is where people will always have you top of mind. So when they see an opening, they're like, they'll say, okay, you know what? I know Orlando, and Orlando and I, you know, we've spoken a few times, and I really want to encourage him to apply. And this is almost like 50% of the battle towards getting an interview is done, because now you have somebody inside the company making you, first of all, aware of the opportunity, and then more often than not, also willing to refer you and recommend you, right? So think about, you know, creating such a strong network of champions, I would call them, in a bunch of these different global reputable companies. And then while you're doing that, also elevate your brand and your presence and your visibility. So this way you're always top of mind. And they don't have to, you know, think about, oh, who should I reach out to? You're always top of mind for them.
And so for anyone thinking, okay, Johan, working on my personal brand, what does that mean inside the workforce? Because for folks who follow content or follow us, we may talk about it, you know, on the platform and from different aspects. But there's that other side, right? How do you build your personal brand in the workforce, inside the company, in your current role? What would you say are some steps that can support these folks and start something they can implement starting tomorrow?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we often focus on personal branding to help you get the job. But then what about your branding once you have gotten the job? And this is important, Orlando, not just, you know, to increase your awareness and presence and all of that, but it also helps when it comes time to promotion decisions, right? So then what does branding look like when you're in the company? So one thing that you want to be aware of is, do people know that I exist in the company? And not just people, the right people, right? So people typically at the decision-making level. So, you know, your boss's boss, other leaders who are also part of your team, other leaders who are also part of different teams, perhaps, you know, someone within the executive team. So when you, for example, pick the people you want to have conversations with, you want to pick as a mentor, again, you want to be very strategic in picking people who have influence, right? Who are in that decision-making authority, who will, you know, who will watch out for you, who will have an influence when it comes time to, you know, your visibility, your promotion as well. The other thing you can do is you can raise your hand for high visibility projects. Okay. So when you get into these big companies, I mean, you'll have your day-to-day job, but then they will always have some strategic projects going on that are sponsored by, you know, the executive team that have potentially the CEO as like the main sponsor. So try to get on those kind of projects, because those projects have very high visibility. They have a direct impact on, you know, the savings for the company or the profit or the market share for the company. So I did that very strategically in order to, you know, move up when I was, you know, in my previous consulting world. So I would say those three steps should really help you. It's all about visibility, right? So it's all about getting that visibility. Yep. And then, of course, delivering on the good work as well.
I love that, because like you said, you can land yourself in a role not knowing that the role does have higher visibility up into, you know, senior executive, C-suite level. So it's good to track that, to say, okay, what departments does, you know, do my role, does my role impact who sees the projects, who sees the reports, who sees the work mm-hmm. that I'm doing? So I'm aware of that, right? And then I think that self-awareness and knowing, okay, this is really, you know, a role that's going to be seen by, you know, tons of people. But the good thing too is that you can be seen as the SME, right? The subject matter expert. But there is that added pressure to know that, oh my God, this is going up the chain, you know. And I think today, hopefully in today's, you know, corporate America, that more folks are getting, you know, managers are saying, hey, my partner X has produced this. This is the work they're doing. And they're rolling that information up. So your name gets carried up through the chain. So they know who's, you know, who's touching certain things first before it gets to, you know, to the next level. So like you said, that visibility piece. But if you know what that is prior to, that's great. And I think it makes you more self-aware around how do you develop and craft your personal brand. But great, great advice. So, folks, if you still have some questions, definitely just start flooding those in. We can get Johan to peel off a couple. But, Johan, what are some practical – well, you gave us a ton of practical ways. let's flip it. What shouldn't we be doing when we're trying to target, and then once we're inside a global brand, what are some mistakes you've seen people make?
Yeah, another great question. I love the questions that you're asking. So, I mean, I've mentioned this already, but I'll say it again. Be very, very clear on your why. So why is it that you want to work for a big global company? And you know, be very honest with yourself. Because it does, like Orlando was saying, it does take a lot of your energy, a lot of commitment. First of all, it's not easy to get into these companies. So that itself is very mentally taxing, very exhausting, causes a lot of burnout and fatigue. And then, of course, once you get in, you know, it's a big global company. So obviously, the expectations are high, the projects are complex. So it's not very easy, but some people, a lot of people, they thrive on that. And if you're one of them, then certainly, you know, this is the right option for you. So one is being very clear and doing your homework in terms of why you want to work there and what companies you want to target. So don't make the mistake of just applying to all of the big consulting firms or all of the big tech companies, because it might not be the right fit for you. The second mistake that I've seen is people try to be a different version of themselves, right? Because now they have gotten their foot into this big company, and all of a sudden they're surrounded by top tier people. So very smart people from, you know, top MBA schools, for instance. And all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I have to prove myself. And you might start acting, behaving in ways that is not authentic, that is not true to yourself. And this again results in mental fatigue, because every single day you're showing up, but you're not showing up as yourself. You're showing up as like like you're being pretentious, and you're showing up as a different version. So I would say you can't really fake it for too long. I mean, I've, you know, the fake it to make it holds true, but it's not a very sustainable strategy, right? So you know, fake it until a certain amount, and then of course be authentic, because that's because vulnerability is also very powerful. It's okay to say, you know what, I don't know this, I've never done this before, or this is something I need a little bit of support with, and then I can operate after that on my own, right? So it's perfectly okay. No human being starts off working for a big company knowing everything. We all learn as we go. So it's perfectly okay to raise your hand, to ask questions, to ask for help. And then the third thing I would say is, and this is especially true for consulting firms, right? So with consulting firms, when you get placed on a client, right, don't go in just offering them a bunch of different things and bunch of advice, because typically what I've noticed in my consulting years is clients actually appreciate consultants who spend the first few weeks listening to them. So talking less, but listening more, listening to them about their people, their culture, the way things are done, what's worked, what's not worked. And people have actually told me that Johan, the fact that we like working with you is first of all, because, you know, you're emotionally intelligent, and you really have your, you know, your head on your shoulders, as opposed to the typical type A consultants that we've had, you know, in the past exposure to. And the second thing is you're a very good listener. So you take the time to show us that you care, to get to know us, to get to know our work. So and this is advice that I've, you know, since then taken to heart, and it works really well when you take the time to listen first. And that's why you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Right. So listen before you speak and give advice.
Exactly. I think that's really cool, because I don't know if you've done it yet, but I think you can pull some, you specifically, Johan, can, whether it's an ebook or a post, just saying here are some personality skill sets that's worked in the consulting space that made you successful, that can be, you know, that can apply to, you know, individuals in different functions, but within corporate America. And to your point, having that emotional intelligence, right? Super huge. The listening skills before just, you know, wanting to, you know, share your advice, opinions, and ask a bunch of questions, but really digesting the concerns of your internal stakeholders and external customers, right? So I think those are key different character traits that we all need to develop as we progress in the career. It's time. One of the points you said was really good. I think was leaning more towards what you said, but what popped in my brain was imposter syndrome, right? When you go in and you're starting to, you become, you know, you start to act like someone else. I can tell you, I've worked for Amazon. So I was a TA lead for them. Okay. And when you're talking about big brains and being around a lot of intelligent Ivy League, you know, people, first-hand experience, you were spot on. You're like, holy cow, these people are smart. And so seeing that, for me, I was just soaking it in, like, wow, let me think really hard before I open my mouth and sound like, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. But that's definitely something you go through. You'll get around some extremely smart people. But talk to us before we close out about, you said something earlier about expectations, but I want to pivot to expectations around work-life balance, right? Because when we think about, you know, our values and things like that, and not taking on high stress roles, in roles that we can have a life outside of the workplace, talk to us about how do you structure that, or expectations around work-life balance?
Yeah, another good question, Orlando. I'm glad you asked this. And I briefly touched upon this. So when I started doing consulting, you know, a lot of it was very high profile projects, and a lot of it was nonstop travel. In fact, I used to travel Sunday night until Friday night. So I was really just home for like a day and a half. And at that time, I was young, and you know, it was fine. The travel, the commute, the long hours, everything was okay for me. Now, with, you know, having a family, it's not feasible. So I've purposefully taken on a very different role within consulting, which gives me the flexibility of, you know, working from home, not traveling whatsoever, and working within a specific set number of hours. So very good question around, you know, being mindful that working for these big name companies definitely requires you to put in a little extra effort, because now you're working for that reputable brand. You know, they might be paying you a little bit more money. And this is the other question I ask people is, you know, how many hours do you want to work in a week? Because if you tell me you want to work, you know, 35, 40 hours in a week, you're not going to get that with consulting. You know, it's nearly impossible to work, you know, a 40-hour week. I mean, yes, once in a while, you know, when things are slow, it might happen. But typically consulting weeks are, you know, 50, 60, 70 hours. So then the question you want to ask yourself is, you know what, I'm making, you know, X amount of money, but then I'm also working for 70 hours. So at the end of the day, right, you know, am I better off getting $20,000-$30,000 less, but then working half the amount of time? And maybe that's more feasible, and also that's more healthier for my mental well-being as well as my family and work-life balance, right? So this is why when you
great point. I think if you do the
those discovery calls with people, ask them these kind of questions. You know, what does your typical week look like? How many hours are you working? How much are you typically traveling? Because all of this is not in the job description, and they will not give you these kind of details, because obviously they want to attract you and they want to attract top talent. So I'm glad. Thank you so much, Orlando, for asking that very good question.
Absolutely. No, great point, because you're working 70 hours. If you do the math hourly, you could be making less than what you really think. Right. So exactly. It's like, wait a minute, this is not what I thought. And you have no time to enjoy it, to spend time with family, which is most important. So before we close out, I always have I give it a minute or so for any folks with the last questions that they want to pop in. But I want to be mindful of Johan's time, as we talked about family, so we can both get back to our families. Right. And so the question I always ask with folks is, why do you do what you do?
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I coach people on discovering, you know, what is it that they want to do and finding their purpose. I rarely get asked this question in terms of, you know, why do I do what I do? What's my purpose? So my purpose, my why, Orlando, has always been to serve people, to serve humanity. And the reason why I chose a career in consulting is because consulting is all about, you know, helping organizations and helping people within those organizations to become better versions for themselves. And while doing that, serving towards, you know, helping the organization thrive and succeed as well. So this is what prompted me to get into consulting. Now, after, you know, close to 15 years in consulting, what I realized is a lot of the consulting I was doing was, you know, starting to now focus on efficiencies for the organization, profits for the organization. And for some of the projects I worked on, I felt like the people piece was missing. So I was like, you know, how are people positively being impacted? What's changing in a person's life? And this is why I then took a pause and I started, you know, this career coaching venture of mine. And this is where I get to work with people one-on-one. I get to see the transformation in their lives, and I get to see them, you know, going from being unemployed or having a job that's not fulfilling or not meaningful to now, you know, working for a good name company, making a lot more money, feeling fulfilled, feeling energetic, lively, you know, fueled up. And now I get to do both. So I get to do, you know, my consulting as well as I get to do career coaching, which is what I do, which is why I do what I do.
Love it. Appreciate you, sir. Johan, again, long overdue conversation for us. Yeah. To have you on the podcast, but absolutely well worth the wait. The timing was perfect. Appreciate the tremendous advice, your professionalism, your transparency, right? I think folks nowadays definitely absolutely need to hear transparency from experts who are out there coaching and not just, you know, fluff information and kind of, you know, the basic information. They need real time, you know, executable information that'll help them, you know, achieve their next goal. And so that's why each episode has that mission that they can walk away with at least 1 to 2 actionable steps that they can apply immediately. So again, appreciate your time, sir. For the folks that are watching, absolutely, if you're in Johan's network, and appreciate if you connect with me, follow me as we, you know, bring new guests each week, and vice versa. If you're in my network watching, connect with Johan. You heard the advice today. Everything he said is spot on. You can actually take immediate, massive action on what he said. But the one takeaway I want to say is this, that you said, which you mentioned it twice, you know, don't apply for every large company, right? You have to know your personality and get clarity to make sure it's a fit first. I think that's crucial before you jump out of the frying pan into a fire and hate the whole entire experience, right? So again, I appreciate your advice. Any last parting words for the folks that are watching live and that'll catch the replay?
I want to say, you know, first of all, thank you, Orlando, for having me. You know, I was pestering Orlando for 2 years. I'm like, Orlando, get me on this podcast. You have like one of the best podcasts, you know, for career development. And he had such amazing speakers. I'm like, you know what? I think he has better people. I'll keep waiting. And then one day he said, you know, Johan, your turn has come. And here we are. So thank you so much, you know, for being patient with me and finally having me to speak with your audience today. For all of you, you know, thank you so much. I see so many comments coming in. Thank you so much for joining. I'm so glad that, you know, you were able to attend. And Orlando, thank you for the questions you asked, because, you know, a lot of the conversation in these podcasts depends on the quality and, you know, the questions that people ask. And I'm so happy that you asked me exactly the kind of questions, and a lot of these questions I haven't been asked before. So thank you for that. I would say, I hope this was beneficial. This was insightful for everyone joining. If you haven't connected with us, you know, more than happy for you to connect with us and follow us.
Here's what we'll do. So the folks that are still on, I want you to put part two in the comments. Part two. Flood the comments with part two, because I think it's definitely worth bringing Johan back for sure. He just crushed it, right? If I had something I can drop fire or, you know, a mic or something just to show the value you brought, sir, I absolutely appreciate it. So, again, folks, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. It's Career Talks Podcast on all your podcast platforms. Follow, connect with Johan. Soak up his information. Soak up his knowledge, his expertise. If you need the coaching, connect with this man. He will make sure you have clarity in your target. But that's it for now, folks. We'll catch you next time. And again, any questions, continue to ask. Johan is available to answer those things.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks so much.
See you next time, folks.
Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.